Okay. We have a lot to accomplish. It is Parshas Parah de Shabbos, where we read about the Parah Aduma. That's the chok of all chukim, right? The red cow that they burned and mixed the ashes with certain ingredients and sprinkled on people who were tamei mei so they could come to the Beis Hamikdash and offer the Korban Pesach. Also, in addition to that, it's basically Erev Pesach. We have to talk about Pesach. Also, last week we were not here. We didn't get to talk about Chet HaEgel. We have to talk about Chet HaEgel. The Parah Aduma and the Chet HaEgel are very connected. Chazal tell us, let the mother cow, the Parah, come and make up for the mess, come and do clean up for the mess that her child, the little Egel, made. What is the connection between Parah Aduma and Chet HaEgel? Okay. And what is the connection between Chet HaEgel, how could they have sinned, obviously the age-old question, with the golden calf, and how what was the problem there? And it has to be integrally related, obviously, to Yetzias Mitzrayim, to Pesach, to Kabbalah Satorah. It was a reaction to that. It was a response to that. So in order to deal with Parshas Parah and Chet HaEgel and Pesach, we have to start looking into a few ideas that we associate with Yetzias Mitzrayim. And here are some of the ideas we're going to focus on today. First of all, we're going to speak about the main idea that is going to be the key idea to explain Korban Pesach, Parah Aduma, Chet HaEgel, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the concept of the Aliyah, the ascent from Egypt. The words we're going to be working with, the topic of today, is Tuma and Tahara. We're going to explain and define purity and impurity. Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, is an exodus from the 49 levels of Tuma. We'll talk about what that means. The whole period of Pesach to Shavuos, the Omer, is the 49 levels of Tahara, increasing our purity level by level. We're going to speak about all the basic words associated with Pesach. Pesach, Mitzrayim, Paro, Chodesh, the month. That's the first command in Perek Yud Beis, Parshas Bo. And how all these things come together and are symbolized by the three basic foods we eat on Pesach. Today we're going to deal with the Korban Pesach. Hopefully next week we'll talk about Matzah and Maror, the three mitzvahs d'oraisa that are mitzvahs of things to eat on Pesach. Pesach, matzah, and maror. Today, we don't have Korban Pesach. So we can't do that mitzvah d'oraisa. We eat the matzah for afikomen instead of the Korban Pesach. We still have the mitzvah of matzah and the mitzvah of maror, which was part of the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. You had to eat Korban Pesach with maror. We do today as a drabbanon. It's no longer the d'oraisa that it was because we don't have the Korban Pesach to eat it with. But there are three foods associated with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, with telling the story of the exodus from Egypt. And today we're going to speak about the Pesach and how that's related to the Sipur, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And as we said, dealing with the ideas of Tuma and Tara and Parah Aduma and Chet HaEgel. Okay, these all have to come together. We'll start with what is alluded to and what is clearly embedded, okay, in the text, in the pshat of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the story of Exodus, the story of Geula, redemption. Chazal want us to look deeper, and they ask a question. You know, what particular quality, what human capacity was most in exile? Right? What aspect of humanity, of the potential of humanity, was most not utilized, most deadened, most buried, so to speak, under layers and layers and layers of tumah, of impurity, so that it was considered to be in exile? And Chazal answered, Zohar says, the Kabbalah explains, that speech, dibur, was in exile, and dibur was redeemed. Speech was in exile, and speech was redeemed. If we start speaking about Exodus, redemption, we have to think about speech. Now, look at this. We don't mean the speaking apparatus, the physical apparatus of speaking, although in Moshe Rabbeinu, there was some type of problem with his speech in the beginning of the story. He says, Lo ish devarim anochi, I'm not a person of these words, whatever that meant. However, you see, through Moshe himself, the redemption of speech, because after the process, after Matan Torah, we have an entire Sefer, Devarim, that starts with Eila HaDevarim Asher Diber Moshe, an entire Sefer of Moshe speeches. Moshe himself, as the official spokesman for Klal Yisrael, goes from a state of galus, his speech is in exile, and his capacity to speak is redeemed. In addition, the word Pesach, which we know means to skip over, there's an allusion also to speech. We break up the word, and also a Kabbalistic notion is that it refers to peh, the mouth, sach, with having the capacity to have a sicha. Now, it's a samach and a sin, but they're interchangeable. But a sicha is to discuss, to converse. The whole method of the Pesach Seder is discussion, question and answer, things you have to say, a story you have to tell. And Rav Hirsch points out that notice that Klal Yisrael, we are told, when they leave Mitzrayim by Yisu, they traveled from Pisom, Pi Satum, the mouth that is clogged and closed and blocked, to the place where the great miracle happened on the Yam. That place was called Pi Hachirot, Pi Hacherut, the mouth of freedom, the mouth that is free to speak. So there's no question about it. We're being told that Klal Yisrael were in a state where what is referred to as their ability to speak, to converse, to tell a story, to have something to say, was in Galus. Rav Yoshua Ber Soloveitchik, and by the way, if you want to invest in one excellent book for Pesach, English, beautiful, not so difficult reading, this is Festival of Freedom by Rav Yoshua Ber. Really beautiful. In any case, he explains, not really in this book, but he explains that what we're trying to say here is that Klal Yisrael, being that they were on the 49th level of Tumah, which is going to mean nothing but ignorance, Tumah in the head, Tumah of lack of knowledge. It is not moral and ethical Tumah. They were not adulterers and murderers and child molesters and etc. This is not what their problem was. Proof? That when Moshe was wondering why Klal Yisrael deserved to suffer so much, he could not find an answer to his question. Until one day, after he killed the Egyptian who was beating a Jew, he came upon two Jews, Dathan and Abiram, who were fighting, and he interfered, and they said, butt out, because if you don't butt out, we're going to report what you did yesterday to the king, because we're not interested. And Moshe realized at that time that if a Jew is capable of betraying another Jew, someone who's trying to help them, that must be why they're in Gullus. In other words, nothing else was obvious. Culturally, they were still Jewish, identified as Jews. They knew they were different. They knew they had a different worldview, a different sense of the purpose. However, it had become so dull in their minds what made them unique, how their thinking was supposed to be different than the thinking of the society around them. That was called Tumah. They were in the 49th level of Tumah in Mitzrayim, and that is what we mean when we say that their dibor, their speech, was in Gullus. In other words, when we live in a state of ignorance, which we'll develop this further, we have no story to tell. We have no message. When we don't have a better explanation to the world and the purpose of life and what we're supposed to be doing here than the society around us, then we have nothing to say of interest, of value. We have no message. We have no way to enlighten anybody. In other words, there's nothing of value. Yes, we speak about our needs and our survival and if we're in pain and how we hate our situation, but that's not the speech we're speaking about. We're speaking about a speech which conveys higher truths, aspirations, a destiny, a purpose, other than what is accepted in the world at that time. Something new, a chidush. So we're working with the idea of speech being in dibor, and that's directly related to a state of tuma. Now, the characters associated with this state of tuma are Paro, and Mitzrayim. We say Avadim Hayinu Leparo B'Mitzrayim. These are words that have deep levels of meaning. First, the word Mitzrayim. The word Mitzrayim is divided into two words. Classic idea, Meitzar Yam. Meitzar means narrow, limited, constrained. Kol ha'olam kulo gesher tzar ma'od, right? Limitation. You're like a bowling ball in a gutter. There's just one little path and there's nothing else. There's nothing beyond it. And what is constrained? The yam, the sea, which is Begematria Yudmem 50. The sea, yam ha-Torah, the sea is always a euphemism for limitless knowledge. Because the sea can inundate the whole world. Its power can drown everything. In other words, it's the metaphor for overwhelming, limitless, all-encompassing knowledge. And the gematria of yam is 50. We always speak about 50. It's the number after 49. This is starts with Pesach, ends in Shavuos. It represents the 49 levels of Tumah, right? Tumah is represented as 49 levels. And Tahara is represented as 49 levels. Why 49? Because 49 is 7 times 7. And what is 7? 7 is what represents nature. 7 times 7 always represents the full expansion of nature. In other words, nature exponentially expanded to its fullest extent, and then beyond that is 50. What we mean by this is the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world. Nature has the capacity to reveal to us great truths, not just physical nature, human nature. There is endless chokhmah and embedded in the world that Hashem created. And our responsibility is to have, this is the primary responsibility of a human being, and this is what happens in Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is the freedom. This is the Exodus. This is the Tahara in place of the Tumah. A human being must have correct explanations for life. A human being is responsible to know, and this is what Avram tried to teach the world, which got lost in Mitzrayim, which got lost through the hundreds of years, which is why we had no story to tell. Rambam explains that the Tumah was the loss of the ideas of monotheism and all its implications. That was the Tumah. Tumah is not, again, not on an ethical, moral level. It's all in the head. As you know, Tumah and Tahara are abstract concepts. Tumah and Tahara are not literal physical things at all. They're abstract. They're in here. Everybody has a basic responsibility to know and stay loyal to the true explanation for what life is about, for this world.
But they didn't have Torah yet.
They had from Avraham. They had from Avraham, Avraham started a process of enlightenment, enlightening the world. Wait one second. We're going to discuss this right now. There were two options. There are two ways. Well, no, there are many more than two. In fact, there's an entire area of science, which is called epistemology, which is the study of the acquisition of knowledge. What is knowledge and how do we acquire it? And there are many, many theories. One of the theories in acquiring knowledge is the theory of what is called what we relate to as empirical or empiricism, which is knowledge is acquired through perception of the senses. What we see, what we smell, this becomes our interpretation for life. There is another way to, many other ways to acquire knowledge. Rambam makes it very, very, very clear. And this is what happened at Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this is what, by the way, the 13 Ikrim are all about. We've mentioned this. Rambam states 13 truths. They are called the 13 Ikrim. The 13 truths are that there is a single God, that he created, we're not going to go through all of them, but you know basically that he created and controls all of nature. It's not random forces competing with each other. There's a oneness. That God created humanity and cares about humanity. That God interferes in the affairs of mankind to direct them towards their goal. That God communicates to man and makes his will known. That Hashem expects from man, and there is what we call schar va'onesh, reward and punishment. That Hashem promises there will be a destiny and a goal that will be achieved, we call Mashiach, and beyond that, tchiyas ha'meisim. There are truths. Everybody asks, and Rav Meisher Shapira has a whole sefer on this called Re'ei Emuna, where does Rambam get his really his opinion that a person must know these things, that these are the things a person must know, and if a person doesn't know these things, they are heretic. Whether, even if it's accidental, they're not really considered a full-fledged member of the Jewish people in terms of their ideas if they do not know these things. And Rambam Institute, it's fundamental. It is necessary to know these things. And he explains, Rav Shapiro explains, that all of these things that became the 13 Ikrim were demonstrated to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. They came to learn through rational faculties the truth about life, Hashem's creation, what our job is here, what Hashem wants, our mission, our role. They came, it was taught to them. That teaching of those truths is what extricates us from the ignorance which is called Tumah. Tumah is a worldview that is based on imagination, superstition. Okay, superstition, foolishness and blindness that comes from perceiving things through the senses. And developing interpretations based on wishful thinking, on phobias, on fears. Where does this come from? When man is in a state of terror because they view the world as having forces greater than them who are competing with each other, who have no interest in man. Man is a slave of circumstance. A man is a victim of whatever happens up there among the gods. Man is the victim. Man lives in a state of terror, which is exactly how the Egyptians depicted their gods. Huge, fearsome, cruel, disinterested, right? This is the Egyptian concept of the gods. Man lives in terror. Terror knows of no morality. Terror causes man to come up with solutions. Imaginative solutions, such as child sacrifice to appease the gods, sacrifice of virgins to appease the gods. Terror drives a person away. It's the opposite. It drives a person away from freedom. It makes a person focus only on their survival and live in a state of superstition, mishigas, stupidity, and blindness. The Indians ate their victims' hearts so that they should have courage. All kinds of stupidity. In Tibet, there's an endless epidemic of blindness because they're pagans. They believe in nature forces. So they think that the people are blind because the snake god cursed them. So there's no point to investigate medically or scientifically why people are going blind because of the pollution and the toxins in their river. That's irrelevant because the snake god cursed them. And if the snake god cursed them, then who am I to interfere with the god's will and help them? So they die on the streets. And the Tibetan monks do nothing, zero. They do zero. There is a movie called Blind Sight, you could Google it, about the cruelty that comes from the terror that comes from worship of nature, which is stupidity, which is not the correct answer to how the world runs. Tumah is a state of existence which is defined by ignorance, which is defined by fear, by phobias, by slogans, by superstition, by wishful thinking, by imagination. Imagination kicks in with all kinds of solutions. It's all lies. It destroys humanity. It takes away humanity's freedom. This is Tumah. This is a state that the world existed in. But the Jewish people are not meant to be a people victim to those type of ideas. That's what we mean. We say we're on the 49th level of Tumah. We didn't know what else to think. We weren't clear anymore about our way of thinking. And we had to be extricated from that. That's the concept of Mitzrayim. Mitzar Yam. The narrows, the entire 50. In other words, that which nature could teach us if we investigate and we explore mathematics and physics and the rule and come to the true rules like Avraham did that govern the world through contemplation, free contemplation, devoid of fear, which turns a person, as we said, into a pawn and a victim. Into a helpless pawn, and ultimately, by the way, the ultimate disaster of this type of thinking is fatalism. Fatalism, since it's predetermined by the gods, there's nothing I can do to save myself, to change my fate. I'm just born to survive. to allow my, figure out methods to best ensure my survival, but there's no such thing as me making a difference, me coming up with a plan for the future that I can pursue, because the gods will strike me down, the gods will interfere, the gods don't want me to advance myself. It's a fatalism, a totally anti-Jewish way of seeing the world. Things are determined, and I have nothing but survive in them. I have no options but to survive in them. That's the Meitzar Yam, as opposed to the Yam, the 50, which we reach on Shavuos, which is greater and greater knowledge and freedom, starting with the revelation of all the things that became the Ikrim in the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which enlightens us. And then we have a message. We have an alternative explanation to what life is about to convey to everyone else. We have something to guide humanity, a purpose. Paro bigamatria is the same as shana, year. The word shana represents the year. It also is like the word mishneh, to repeat, repetitive, repetitive, repetitive. If you look into ancient societies, you will come upon, for sure, you will come upon the concept of cyclical time, as opposed to linear time, which did not exist prior to Klal Yisrael. Cyclical time is repetitive time, just going through the spring and the fall and the summer and the fall and the winter, going through the season, saving up harvest, you know, planting and harvesting and saving and eating and just surviving, you know, like the Lion King, the cycle of life, nothing but the repetitive cycle over and over again. That is the concept of the year, the solar year. In other words, this earth rotates on its axis over and over and over and over and over again, and 365 rotations is called a year, and it repeats itself and repeats itself and repeats itself and repeats itself, and there's no such thing as an alternative or a change. This was the way people lived. This is called Tuma. This is what Avodah Zarah comes from. Avodah Zarah is an imaginary explanation for the world. Avodah Zarah is explaining the cause of everything we see here incorrectly. That's what it is. It's incorrect explanation of the world, which leads to, as we said, all the horrors of nature worship. And then, of course, image worship that goes with it. The word, the paro is shana, is the same gematria as repetitive. The first mitzvah that comes to play in Parashas Bo, Perek Yud Beis, which you have on page what? 348 is HaChodesh Hazel Lachem. This month, we're not going to spend too much time because we're going to do Parshas HaChodesh later on. But this Chodesh, you will count time by months. Month is the concept of constant change. Every month begins with a little sliver of the moon and grows and grows and grows. It waxes and wanes. There's always change. There's always a Chiddush. There's always something new. And that instantly goes into the halachas of Korban Pesach, which we have to add to the mix here. Korban Pesach is the beginning of the extrication from the Tumah, the beginning of the Tahara, the beginning of enlightenment, the extrication from ignorance. The relationship between the Parshas HaChodesh and Korban Pesach, which immediately follows, is that Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael, I'm about to, through the process of Korban Pesach and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the whole thing, I'm about to elevate you, extricate you, and elevate you from the ignorance that the entire world is unfortunately trapped underneath this heavy, heavy, you know, kind of a mountain of ignorance. You are about to introduce into the world a chiddush, a brand new idea. And that idea is going to be your story, your story. You're going to have something to say. Your dibur is not going to be in gullus anymore. You're going to go to a place where you can speak of the truth and enlighten people with the truth and help them understand themselves and their role and the role of nature and their purpose and their tachlis and how they're going to be happy and what they're meant to do and what they're hardwired already to want to do. You're going to introduce people to themselves, to the truth. And you're going to, in a sense, free the world from the delusions that they live under. And this process started in Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we're leaving Paro, the cyclical, repetitive, Shana, the concept of the way everyone else measure time, and we're going into a whole new way, a way of Chiddush, of change, alternative explanations, and we're going to do it via Korban Pesach. But notice, by the way, to indicate this idea of change, of thinking out of the box, of a new solution to the same old problem, a new way of seeing things. They come to the Yam. The Egyptians are behind them. Right? This is a week after Pesach, right? The seventh day. And the mountains are on either side of them, and there's an ocean in front of them, and they think they have no escape route. Okay? So they start to daven, and Hashem says, why are you crying? Just don't you see your path? It's right in front of you. In other words, the ability to see a new solution to the problem, a solution that you didn't think was a solution that you didn't imagine could be a solution. That's the concept of a chiddush, something new, that you're seeing something in a way you didn't see it before. All of a sudden, the ocean became a path. This is the concept of breaking out of the limiting meitzar, constraints of the way everybody sees things, society sees things. We see things. Our senses tell us things. Our imagination tells us things. Our ignorance tells us things. Breaking out of that. Now we have Paro, we have Mitzrayim, we have the ideas of Tuma and Tara, and we have the ideas of the Shana and the Chodesh. All of these ideas working together. Here we come to the concept of the Korban Pesach. When you look into the halachas of the Korban Pesach, all right, turn to, again, Parshas Bo right here. The Maharal, this is a classic Maharal idea, born out of the halachas associated with Korban Pesach. Look at all the halachas, and I'll give you one hint, and then you try to figure out the general theme. Pasuk Gimel, on the 10th of the month, what is 10? 10 is always a full unit. Each person has to take a seh, a lamb or a kid. Each person has to pre-designate a group that will eat this seh together as a unit. Okay? It has to be unblemished and complete. A one-year-old male. Okay? It has to be guarded to the 14th day of this month. Then you have to slaughter it in the evening. You take the blood, you put it on the doorposts, which is going to be a sign, but later we'll see, for Klal Yisrael. Then you eat the flesh, the basar, on that night. You must roast it, eat it with murra. Do not cook it. Only roast it, the entire animal together, the whole animal. Do not leave any till the morning, and anything that's left over has to be burned. So here we have 1 year old, okay, complete and unblemished, eaten in a group, taken on the 10th, okay, no bones broken, by the way, is one of the halachas, not allowed to be cooked, but only roasted, eaten only at that time period, and then burned, nothing left over to the next day. The Maharal explains, and this is the beginning of the tahara, of the purification, of the opening, of the extrication from the tumah and the ignorance. The Maharal explains that everything of Korban Pesach speaks of an echad, a unity, a shlemus. Everything of Korban Pesach speaks of the idea which was foreign to them and the source of their ignorance. There is a oneness. In other words, their perception of the world, which was wrong, was that there are many forces competing with each other. There's nature, which is random forces, unpredictable also, and very cruel, and is completely unconcerned with the human beings here, which, by the way, is the same exact state that the Jewish people were in as slaves. There are two types of slavery. There's slavery to a personal master, in which, like Yosef, you could achieve a certain status. And then there's state slavery, like communism, or North Korea, or by Hitler. State slavery, the individual is worthless. You can achieve no status. It's utterly cruel. There's no redemption at all. The Jewish people were in a state of, we were slaves to the state. We were Paro and Mitzrayim. We were slaves to the individual and to the state. Also, humanity was enslaved in a way to the forces, the random forces that were disinterested in the human beings. They were also, it was a cruel system. Nobody mattered. No human being mattered. It was a system that the person was irrelevant. Only what happened up there mattered. It's a form of slavery, and slavery, ignorance is slavery. The mistake they made enslaved them, as we said, to terror, to fear, which led to superstition, which led to terrible methods of serving the gods. The point here is that the Korban Pesach speaks of a oneness. There are not random forces, not in nature, not in human nature. Okay, everything in the Bria, everything in creation is meant to work together, each and every aspect of the Bria, each and every individual person, every part of nature, all of history as it will unfold, everything will reveal, and we spoke about this Purim time, different dimensions of the Echad, of Ein Od Milvado. Everything will speak of, in its own way, even Haman, Ein Od Milvado, that there's one goal, one destiny, and all things are potentially not causes for blindness, but causes for enlightenment. All things can teach us more and more, and we ourselves can utilize different aspects of the world, the parts that we come in contact with, our particular individuality, our chidushim, chadash, the way we see things, our particular perspective, everything reveals another dimension of the achdus that exists. And that's why, for the first time in history, unheard of in the paganistic world, not just unheard of, the ultimate insanity, they took the korban, they offered it to God, and then they went over to the altar, where they offered it to God, and they took it off the altar, and they ate it. They ate the sacrifice that they offered to God. In the paganistic world, where you were completely, your only interest was to keep them content so they didn't bother you, you didn't cross that line and go and take their sacrifice and eat it for yourself. Because that means that you have no regard for them, that you matter. The first time in history that people ate from a sacrifice, that was the point of Korban Pesach, was this. We are in a partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Actually, Hashem is the cause of, cares about people. He has a plan for people. We, the Jewish people, are going to be the ones that are going to tell that story. We're going to start telling the story, explaining that to everybody else. We are, Hashem wants us to, and through us, is going to use us, needs us, wants us to be the vehicles in this world to explain why we're here and what he wants. And his interests are with us, not his own interests where we don't matter. It's not that kind of cruel world. His interests are for us to know who he is and to bond with him and to become like him and to express his will through our day-to-day life. It's a whole different structure. It's something chadash. It's brand new. So the Korban Pesach, that which distinguishes, that ultimately caused the Jewish people to be distinguished from the Egyptians, was our willingness to commit ourselves, and that's why we took the blood, and we put it on the doorpost inside. As the Torah says, it will be a sign for you. Lachem la'os. You will see what you just committed your lifeblood to, your life force. When you sit in your house, closed off from the outside world, which means from all the other stories and explanations of life, whatever is current, whatever is the thinking process out there, you shut that out. You retreat into your own Dalet Amos, and you take the blood of the Korban Pesach, put it on the doorpost, so that you recognize what it is you've just committed to. You've committed to a completely alternate worldview. A worldview that says that there is an echad, a one harmonious, comprehensive totality that explains everything. And there's nothing to be afraid of. There's no reason to fear. There are not forces greater than us who don't care about us competing with each other and we're the victims. In a system where there is fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is nothing else to fear. Because fear, and I don't mean fear of punishment, awe of Hashem that was just revealed and is being revealed through the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which becomes the Ikrim, okay? That awe, that opening of the mind, that intelligence, that chokhmah, that makes us realize that everything is part of a plan. Everything Hashem presents to us in the course of our life, everything we encounter, everything in nature is all meant to be utilized as an opportunity to reveal the godly aspect of the person, to make a person more into a Tzelem Elokim, to make them then capable of receiving the goodness, the perfection, the tov, the what we call schar, that Hashem wants to give us. So a whole different arrangement. Rav Yeshiver says that in a world of all the phobias, maybe in the ancient days of fear of you know, the wrath of the gods and natural disasters. But today we also have many, many fears. Fear of abandonment, fear of illness, fear of being alone, fear of being unliked, fear of fear of the future, fear of vulnerability, fear of other people's opinions. We have so many fears, right? So the one fear that eliminates all other fearsis a fear called Yiras Shamayim. But it doesn't mean a fear in terms of afraid of something bad happening. It's an awe of the idea, an awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the idea that everything that happens to us in life, because the Mekubalim always see the great global historical processes as taking place, you know, in each person's individual life. So everyone has a Yetzias Mitzrayim. And everybody is in a state of ignorance and foolishness because we allow our imagination to tell us what's really happening when that's not the answer. And everybody has to extricate themselves, and everybody has to become more tahar, more attached to chachma, to truth, to rational thinking, and let that affect the way they see things and what their emotions are. So, in other words, on a global level and on a personal level, the idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set us up as a nation and individually to go through experiences. He's given us so much at our fingertips, all to teach us that it's all for us. That's us to become a Tzelem Elokim, to acquire the qualities that are godlike, to live according to the truths of these of God's essence, really, which comes through the mitzvahs, and then to become like Hashem Himself, eternal, and to what we call b'nehne miziv hashchina, and ultimately spend the rest of eternity knowing the truth, appreciating and basking, so to speak, in the light and the beauty of that truth. That's why Hashem set this whole thing up. Somehow it's all for us. It's a completely different view. This is what Klal Yisrael begin to teach the world in the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is the element of Chayrus. Now, Chet HaEgel, notice something here. This is not so easy to go from a state of interpreting the world according to how we would like to interpret it, wishful thinking, imagination, what our senses want us to believe, to a state which is based, to a state of seeing the world based on rational truth, based on what we've learned to be true, even based on what Hashem has taught us to be true, because it's much more satisfying it's intoxicating almost, it's hypnotic to see something and to respond to it the way, and to interpret it the way we'd like to. You know, beauty, a beautiful person, love, infatuation. Person sees something physically, and they become hypnotized. And they imagine all kinds of qualities that must be associated with this beautiful face. Right? Beauty is not redemptive in Judaism. Beauty takes away our freedom. Our senses, in other words, what we perceive as beautiful, what we like to hear. Look at the charismatic, you know, orators, the Hitlers of the world. It's so motivational. Their speech was so inspiring, right? Millions of people captivated, imagining the things he said to be true, hypnotized by the emotions that they draw out, right? People, ever since the Eitz Hadas, we are our eyes opened, which means we see through our senses. Very dangerous, but very alluring. And we make big mistakes based on that. But we love it. There's something very intensely pleasurable about experiencing something through our senses, imagining the beauty in it, right? And then making choices based on it, even if they ultimately become very dangerous choices, right? There's something, that's what human beings tend to do. And it is very difficult to be, as the Rambam demands and tells us that Judaism demands every human being, is to separate themselves and their natural inclination for the imagination from their perceptions, from their sense perceptions. Not to gather information through the sense perceptions, but to know and to constantly struggle to know what's emes, what's really true. It becomes very, very difficult. Avodah Zarah, the Chet HaEgel, is the Klal Yisrael, when they announce the significance of this Egel, right? What do they say? It's on page 494. Look what they say. Vayomru, Eile Elohecha Yisrael, Asher Elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are your gods that took you up. Elucha. You know, Hashem never says, except one time in the end of Parsha Shemini, we talked about this last year, by Shrutzim. But other than that, Hashem never says He took us up from Mitzrayim. He says He took us out of Mitzrayim, right? Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. But by Rephidim, right before Amalek comes in Beshalach, right? When the first time they begin really to complain to Moshe, they say, Lama, why did you take us up from Mitzrayim? Here, 390. Viomer, here. They were thirsting, and they said, Lama ze helisanu mi Mitzrayim? Why did you take us up from Mitzrayim? Every time they complain, they talk about an aliyah. Rashi says in Shemini there, and there's a pasuk here in Yechezkel, that says in Rephidim, and by the Chet HaEgel, it was a rebellion against Kabbalah's HaTorah. In other words, they recognized that Hashem had elevated them from their ignorance, from their natural human capacity to imagine things and explain things according to their gut imagination, which is always going to make things seem physical. And imagining God as physical, that's Avodah Zarah. Imagining God and imaging God as a physical thing. Imagining abstract concepts as physical entities. The imagination kicks in on every level, and that's how we like to operate. That's the natural default mode. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by revealing to us the real truths behind this world, elevated us from that. That's the elevation of the 49 levels of Tahara in here. But you know what? People are resistant to that. That's the Chet HaEgel. We're actually resistant. We'd like to see things with our senses, interpret them according to our senses. It gives us a feeling of security to stretch ourselves to the abstract, to contemplate, to know truth, to start with the mind. It's less passionate and it's less immediate and there's less of an urgency and it's a whole different process, but it's the process of intelligence, of wisdom, of chachma. The interesting thing about it is this, though. It's easier to purify your chachma than to purify your gut or your emotions. Your emotions are very hard to control, but it is not that difficult to control what you think about and what you learn about. All you have to do is open a sefer and learn it, and you'll get ideas into your head without emotions involved. Sit in front of an educational show, or you know, and you'll learn something. In fact, in the Tanya, can I bring it? Oh no, this is it. There's a beautiful new Tanya Mevoeres, the explaining the Tanya. And on one in a part of Perek Gimel, the compiler explains that we have an obligation, and Rambam, of course, stresses this, but everyone, to cleanse our mind, to purify our mind, to know what Rambam calls de'ot nechono, truths, not to live in ignorance, not to be fools. That's the ultimate requirement. That's called tara. That's called getting out of tumah. That's the process. Knowing that it's not, as we said, random forces, it's a one comprehensive system, and that we play a role in it, and knowing our role in it, and therefore knowing how to take advantage and utilize everything, and not being afraid of random things that come at us from all different directions, that have no purpose and are not connected to each other. Everything is part of our growth, our enlightenment, each person individually and as the nation. And it says here the following. A person might wonder, and this is a very legitimate and necessary question to ask, how does a person turn his heart from desiring, from lusting after things of this world, things we want, you know, physical things, emotional things, things that our senses see and desire, things we want to hear, things we like hearing, things we like seeing, things we like experiencing. How do you switch it so a person starts to devote their heart to loving Hashem and loving truth? How does it happen? So he says, a person, in Hebrew he says, Ki bekocho shel kol adam, it is within every human being's power to create at every moment the capacity of his intelligence to grow and to learn, because mocho bershuto, your mind is in your own rishus. Your heart is not so easily in your own rishus, but your mind, what you think about, is in your own rishus. You can think, you can learn, you can open a book, you can hear a lecture, you can spend the time to hear ideas, to integrate, you know, to receive ideas. Says Shabbat Parish, the explanation is, Shabbat Nigud Laregesh Umidos, as opposed to your feelings, which is very hard to purify them in and of themselves. The kohos of the seichel are in your control, and a person can begin to learn things, even if their heart is not yet feeling any of those things. You can study. And then a person begins to learn and learn, and guess what happens? What we know affects how we feel and how we respond and how we interpret things. It's a very important thing. Rambam says that nevuah depends on imagination. And Rav Aryeh Kaplan explains this further here in this is one of the more mystical books, The Inner Space. Very interesting. He explains that that the way nevuah worked is it worked via the imagination. But it's very important to know that the Navi first had to get to a madrega. And by the way, this is what the Mesilas Yesharim is about. If you want to know what the Mesilas Yesharim was written for, it's a guide book to getting to a point where you can begin to meditate to a state where you could receive nevuah. Okay? That's what the Mesilas Yesharim actually is. Now, he says like this, Rambam says that a Navi first had to purify the intellectual, the capacity. In other words, they had to be completely connected to, bonded to, deot nechono, truths that they received through contemplation, through the active, what he calls the active intellect. When a person's mind was completely bonded to the truth that Hashem had revealed, then in a state of nevuah, they would see some type of image which was abstract, and their imagination would then be called in to identify that abstract image and convert it to something practical that they could convey to the people. And they could use their imagination to make a mashal out of what they saw and bring that mashal, that lesson, to the people in a way that the people could grasp. That's where the imagination comes in. But imagination as a free-for-all, as the source of our interpretations of reality, that's the dangerous part. That's what leads to the terrible practices of the nature-worshipping of nations. That's what led to all the cruelty and all the excuses that people gave for being cruel, what the imagination told them. So we have a very powerful role for imagination. In fact, I will end with this idea, that that transition from not allowing your imagination to be the initiator of your explanations for life, that's delusions. That's ignorance. That's superstitions. Right? Not allowing your imagination to explain life to you, but reserving your imagination, only allowing it to be used for a chiddush. Once you know something that's true and grounded in truth, then your imagination could be utilized to be machadish, to new applications, new explanations, new ways of explaining it. The imagination is dangerous otherwise. It leads people into what we call delusions. And people, we live in delusions. And that's the Yetzias Mitzrayim of every person. Delusions that justify for us the biggest of errors and tell us they're mitzvahs. The delusions that tell us we're right to go on this course of action and it's disastrous. Delusions that tell us we're doing just great when we're on a collision course, right? Denial. All of these things. Tuma is living in that state. Tahara is extricating ourselves from that state. It does not so easy. We must actually say one thing. Today's Shir Shal Yom. Today's Shir Shal Yom, okay? Of Thursday. Okay, quickly. Today's Shir Shal Yom. We say like this, talking about Chet Egel, right? Lo yiyeh b'cha el zar. You will not have a foreign God concept. Lo tishtachva le'el nechar. You should not bow down to some strange other force. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. What are the next words? Hama'alcha, who lifted you up. Aliyah. It's an aliyah from Eretz Mitzrayim. I brought you to a place where you know the world for what it really is and not some false interpretation. We say that all the time. Rashi here says, Rav Gedal Yishor brings down that the Kant, he brings from a Gemara, this is a very important source in Yuma, that the Avera mitamtemet libo shel Adam. It says that the Avera, in a sense, is clogs up the heart of man. Rashi brings down, so temet kol chachma, hareisha inyan tuma, hishagorem otem. The concept of tuma is it clogs up your intelligence. It's ignorance. It blocks you from knowing the truth. That is the definition of tuma, the 49th level tuma. And we just must say this. The day after, and this we will expand on further, but remember this, it's something we spoke about in the past. The day after Pesach, they brought the Korban HaOmer, remember? And we have a very odd way of counting that Omer, counting the Omer. We're not counting the Omer. The Omer was a Korban of barley that was brought on the Mizbeach. It took about 2 hours, and that was it. And then for the next 49 days, we're counting two Shavuos. We mean counting the Omer. The Omer's not there anymore. In fact, the very odd way we count, we say, today is 3 days of the Omer. Today is 7 days in the Omer. As if the Omer is getting bigger every day, as if the Omer is growing each day. Today is 33 days of the Omer. As if the Omer is expanding with time. What a kind of strange counting is this? The secret here is what begins at Yetzias Mitzrayim and ends at Kabbalah Satorah is the 49 processes of enlightenment, okay, which are always referred to as 49. That's the symbolic number for all of Teva exponentially expanded so that everything that exists is part of the process of enlightenment. The idea is that when we count as Jews, we count from an Echad, that's the Korban Pesach, and we don't say one, now there's two, now there's three, now there's four, now there's five, and eventually there's billions and millions up to infinity. That's not how we count. We can start with one, and then that one expands. Now this one, okay, includes in it 2 days. Now it includes in it 3 days. Now it includes in it 10 days. Now it includes in it, let's talk about levels of Tahara. Now it includes in it 15 levels of Tahara. Now it includes in it 25 levels of Tahara. In other words, the Echad just keeps expanding. We start with the concept of Echad, but as individuals and as a nation, we haven't experienced life yet. Nationally, you know, we were just starting out as a people. As we grow in life, we begin to experience things. We begin to learn. We begin to observe. Things happen. We go through experiences, right? And what happens? Slowly we grow. It's called tahara. Purity descends upon us. How does that happen? We begin to realize everything is part of the one declaration of Ein Od Milvado. Everything that happens in our life is another dimension, another facet of everything having a single purpose, a single tachlis, us being part of it, every aspect of our experiences being part of it, everything contributing to our becoming integrated. Our hearts, our minds, our actions, all of it becoming Etzelem Elokim. The one keeps expanding. What is part of the one keeps increasing in our minds, in our understanding, until we get to a point, Umala kol ha'aretz de'as Hashem, the entire world and all of history and all peoples will all know that everything is part of one tachlis. It's all an echad that keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and expanding. And to the degree that a person gains chachma, their perception of the echad continues to expand and expand and expand. It starts with Korban Pesach. It never ends. Although it's 49 days, it never ends. It doesn't end until the end of a person's, the last minute of a person's life, and that they have opportunity somehow or another to experience the Echad and to be a part of it, to play a role in it. So, Amir Tashem, we should all be Zocha to this expansion. I just want to mention this. You can see these beautiful pearls up here, Anita's pearls. You can come look at them for Pesach. And also, next week, Amir Tashem, we have 2 weeks before Pesach, next week and the next one. I'm going to be passing around an envelope for Rav Chesed. So get ready. And that's it, everyone. Have a wonderful week.
You didn't finish.